Welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, SB Nation's blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. We have a special guest joining us for this episode. I am William Chase, your host, and joining us also today, making her podcast debut on the Canon Cast, Rachel Buells. What's up, Rachel?
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
And Elaine Shercliffe. What's up, Elaine?
Hi, Will. Not much.
Hey, yeah, and our special guest is the Columbus Blue Jackets beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch, Brian Hedger. Brian, thank you so much for joining the Canon Cast.
No problem. Good to be with you guys. How's everyone doing?
Good.
I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
Same.
All right, I am too. It's an off day up here in Traverse City. So, you know, not. I wrote one story for tomorrow, and then I just basically been watching football all day. So there you go.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
It's a good Sunday for that. Well, I'll go ahead and get into the questions, and you kind of led off with it. So, Brian, I guess what are you most looking forward to, or maybe even observing or hoping to find out as the prospects tournament plays out this weekend in Traverse City, Michigan?
I think first and foremost, the number one thing that I was looking for, that I think most people are looking for, and I know, John Tortorella, when he was up here, I think he has since gone back home, but he was here for Friday and Saturday, and specifically to look at the goalies, and even more specifically than that is to look at Elvis Merzlikens. He is him and Jonas Korpisalo, they are to start the season. It sounds like they are putting their all their eggs in those baskets right there, and just kind of seeing how that whole thing is going to play out, at least to start the season out, and see if one of those guys can take that starter's role and run with it, just have a battle and see who's going to win that thing. What is interesting to me, though, is, Veini Väivälinen is here as well. He was drafted in 2018 in the sixth round. He's one of their two sixth-round picks in 2018. I think they traded with the Wings to either get him or the other one. I can't remember. But anyway, he's for being a draft pick, he was an older draft pick, and he was 21 years old when they drafted him as his last chance to get drafted. The reason he kept getting passed over was height, basically. I mean, he's listed at 6'2", and, there's some people that think, he's probably not 6'2". He might be a good 6', something like that. And with goaltending anymore, height and length of your arms and legs seems to be kind of a big deal, as well as anticipation. But, Veini Väivälinen, 2 years ago, the year he got drafted, won the Finnish League for Karpat. And, that's no small accomplishment. That's a men's professional league, and he was dominant, and he dominated that league. And he did it again last year. He didn't win the championship last year, but he dominated again last year. So he's kind of a dark horse in this goalie race to replace Bob. And he played last night. Veini Väivälinen played last night against the Minnesota Wild and didn't have any action in the first period at all. He had, two saves or something like that. But the second, third, and overtime, he was busy, and he looked really good. I was really impressed with Veini Väivälinen. He was going post to post. He anticipates plays well. And he made, some dazzling saves as well and some big ones in overtime. So that was a really nice performance to see, especially coming on the heels of what we saw on Friday in Game 1, and that was Elvis Merzlikens. That was Elvis's first ever game on a smaller rink in North America, was here in Traverse City. And that's why those guys are playing in this tournament. And, just to get a little bit of experience on a smaller rink in a real game situation, just to kind of see, how it goes. And that shots come from everywhere over here. They don't, over there on the bigger ice in Europe, sometimes, guys will hold on to the puck forever, and they're trying to set up plays. It's almost like soccer on ice a little bit. Here, it's such a compact ice surface that, guys don't have time to do that. So they're just shooting the puck, and they come from everywhere. And so it's going to take both those guys a little bit of time to adjust to that. But so far, they have looked really good. And to me, that is the biggest thing to look for out of this camp. Tessier has looked good as well. And I think Trey Fix-Wolanski has as well. But if you're looking at it for the number one A1 thing that you want to see is you want to see those two guys playing good in net. And so far for the first two games, they have been.
Yeah, it seems like Merzlikens has settled in a little bit. And the goaltending that's been my question for sure. So it's definitely interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, yeah, I don't want to overlook it or overstate, or I should say understate the importance of you know, Alexander Tessier and guys like that come over here and playing. But, you know, it is the goalies that are a little more important at this point. Texier has looked really good, though. I mean, he's sent, and he, here's another little nugget. He is centering the top line here for the Blue Jackets. So he's playing in the middle. Last year, I think he played mostly on the wing in Finland, Cleveland, and with the Blue Jackets. He does have a history of playing center before last season, though. So he can kind of do both. And that's important because they're going to need some centers, you know, as time goes along here. I mean, centers are just so valuable, especially guys who are effective two-way guys. And he has shown so far that he can be a two-way guy. He can you know, take care of the defensive end, which has a lot of responsibilities and a lot of work. But he can also put the puck in the net, as he did last night with, I think it was 6.3 seconds left in overtime and 3-on-3. Scored a beautiful goal and won that game for the Blue Jackets. So it's going to be interesting, you know, to see him try and make the team. Bemstrom is not here. Emil Bemstrom was supposed to be here, got hit in the mouth with a puck training over in Sweden. And so they just said, hey, you know, why don't you sit this one out and get ready for training camp. He's in Columbus right now. So he's just getting ready for camp, and that's going to start midweek.
Before I get to my question, I just want to text EA. I cover the Monsters up there, and him in the center role, isn't it just like a beautiful thing? Like, he feels super comfortable there. It looks so great when every time Matt switched up the lines and put him at the center, he just went off.
Yeah. And well, what's interesting, I'll tell you what, Mike Eaves, the new coach for the Monsters, we were talking to him about Tessier last night at center. And he brought up a really good point and said, you know, when you have a player like Alexander Tessier, you want that guy to have the puck a lot. You know, you want the puck on his stick. And there's no other position on the ice where you're going to have it more on your stick than center ice. So when you play him in the middle, as long as he can handle that defensive, you know, those defensive zone responsibilities and keeping his own end clear and that kind of stuff, I think the sky's the limit for that guy, especially if he's in the middle.
Right. So with training camp coming up, other than the goalie battle and Texier, what are some of the storylines you are most interested in learning about this team or seeing take shape?
Well, I kind of want to see who plays with who, you know, as they start out. You know, just see the earliest formations of forward lines. I think we kind of have a feeling of, you know, the defensemen, except for Werenski, and I guess that's going to be your big storyline going into camp, is Zach Werenski. Will they get him signed in time for him to get into camp, or is it going to drag on into the preseason like Josh Anderson a couple of years ago? I mean, Josh missed the entire preseason and then came out. He had a great year, but Torts all year long was basically blasting him and his agent, mainly the agent, saying that it could have been an even better year if he'd been in camp. I mean, Torts definitely wants his guys in camp. He wants Zach in camp. He told me that a couple of days ago up here. You know, so that's going to be probably the main storyline until he signs on the dotted line. People are going to be following that. But outside of that one, yeah, I just want to see who's playing with who. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I had a Q&A with Torts on Friday, I believe. Yeah, Friday. And he even said, like, I kind of had a gut feeling this might be the case. But he said he's going to try right away. He's going to stick Nyquist on the same line with Wennberg. And they're going to try it out. And it makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world because they have to find a way to get Wennberg going. You just have to find a way, especially now that Panarin's gone. That guy's got to step up, and he's got to produce more than like mid-20s points for them. So they're going to try and get him going by, you know, putting Nyquist with him because they played together for Sweden several years back. I think it was in the World Championships, and they really had really good chemistry in the World Championships. So maybe they can rekindle some of that here with the Blue Jackets.
So, Bri, how do you just, like, feel overall about this year's team? The roster is so different than it was when the season ended in June. And then now we have this new goaltender in Elvis Merzlikins and, you know, potentially a whole new crop of forwards. Like, overall, where do you see the team going? It's going to be a lot different.
Well, it's interesting. Like, in certain aspects, it is definitely going to be a lot different. But in other aspects, it's going to be look real similar to what we had the last couple of years. I mean, when you look at the core group, and they keep talking about this, the Jackets do, and they're not wrong. I mean, when you look at the guys who are still in Blue Jackets uniforms, that are still in Columbus, it's a pretty impressive assortment of talent. You still have Josh Anderson. I mean, that guy could probably score 30-plus goals if he puts his mind to it. You know, you still have Cam Atkinson, who scored 41 last year, 42, one or two. He topped 40 goals. You had Pierre-Luc Dubois coming on, you know, two big, strong, two-way, number one, legit number one center who, I mean, he's got to work on faceoffs a little more, just continue to get better there, but he's a star in the making. You know, Zach Werenski, once he gets signed, Seth Jones. But you've got all these pieces. How about Oliver Bjorkstrand? I mean, the last month and a half of that season, he scored at like a 30-plus goal pace. If you project it out over, you know, a full season. If you can get a full season out of him like he played the last month and a half, look out for that guy, you know?
Yep. He was killing it.
Yeah, well, exactly. So you have talent here, but you are right, Rachel, that there's going to be roles open. Panarin's gone. Duchesne's gone. You know, Dzingel's gone. The guys who finished the season here as forwards, they're all pretty much, I mean, a lot of key guys are gone, and that's going to open up some roles. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. This is going to be a fascinating season. I just keep using that word, and I can't think of anything else. I mean, I've covered a lot of, interesting teams, good teams. I used to cover the Blackhawks, and, you know, they went to the Cup Final three times when I covered them and won it. But this one, I think this season actually sort of has the potential to be one of the most fun seasons I cover ever, because I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea. I mean, I have a gut feeling. I think that this team might be better than people think, but I can't sit there and say for sure. Yeah, they're going to the playoffs. You know, I don't know. I don't know if anybody can say that, but I also don't think that anybody should be out there saying they're definitely not going to the playoffs either.
So you're talking about Torts on Friday. And I was wondering, so Torts is, of course, you know, somewhat infamous for his relationship with reporters going back to his time in New York. What would you say your relationship is like with him? And, you know, how has he been the same or different than you may have expected?
Well, it's very interesting. That's a great question. Because when I came over here from Chicago, I came over as the team's website reporter. So I was in the role that Jeff Svoboda is in right now. And that's actually where I met Rachel. She was an intern there with the Jackets when I was still in that role. And it was interesting. I came over and it was like, I never really got introduced to Torts. I mean, I sort of did, but it was like we were supposed to. And then but it was like more of a timing thing. Like I got hired and the season had just started. Like it wasn't the preseason. It wasn't whatever. The regular season had already started. They were like a game or two into it. When I started my job there. So, you know, I'm sure from his perspective, he's like, who's this guy, you know, coming in here? Didn't know who the heck I was from Adam. And in the sport of hockey in general, what I've noticed, I've been doing this a long time, doing, you know, sports writing. And hockey's a little different than a lot of the other sports. Like, you sort of have to really put in your time with people sometimes for them to trust you. You know, and for them to kind of get to know you and say, okay, yeah, that guy is a pretty good guy, or that I like her a lot, or anything like that. You know, there's I don't want to say a sense of mistrust right away, but, you know, there's just kind of that uncertainty a little bit. And I think that we dealt with that a little bit in season one on both sides. And last year, I felt like it started to change for the better quite a bit. I felt like I started to kind of understand Torts a little better and how interactions with him, you know, go and you know, certain ways to ask things and, you know, certain times not to ask things and that kind of thing. And you really have to kind of learn that stuff, and you only do that by, you know, being around the guy, you know, longer. And so I feel like now we're to the point where, you know, we have an amicable relationship. There we go. I'll stop using big words. Amicable relationship is what I would say. I tell you what, covering the guy is it's fun. Like, you know, and the way we talk about it, like me and Aaron Portsline and a lot of the people that are around the team that cover him on a daily basis. I mean, yeah, he can be difficult sometimes and blow up on you and everything. But God, we'd rather have a guy like that than some milquetoast guy who just doesn't say anything ever and is like the most boring person on earth. You know, like everybody's talking about Torts at all times, you know, whether he's going off on somebody or whether he's making a joke or answering Tom Reed's phone, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's fun. And so, like, you know, if he weren't here, it would be a big disappointment for us, to be honest with you, because we enjoy, you know, covering his teams because it's always interesting.
Kind of piggybacking off that, do you have any favorite players that you've interviewed or favorite story of an interaction with a coach or player?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. You put me on the spot on that one. Nothing that really jumps out, to be honest with you. I mean, I've had some over the years, like in baseball. Baseball players are renownedly difficult to deal with. Whereas, like, in hockey, you know, most of the guys are pretty good, to be honest with you. I had one time where I remember I was doing an interview in the Red Wings locker room at the United Center in Chicago, and Brendan Smith was on the Red Wings at that time, and he, like, ended up, like, grabbing his own phone and then trying to do the interview at the same time I was, and it was basically mimicking me, and I was like, come on, man, really? But, like, it was kind of funny, you know? Like, and the people took a picture of it. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't really have too many, you know, candid moments or anything like that. I mean, I guess you could look through my first year covering the Jackets, and I'm sure you could find some interactions back and forth with Torts that were kind of comical. But yeah, nothing that really jumps out.
So this season there seemed to be a bit of drama surrounding Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin. How did that situation affect your daily, like, day-to-day covering the team?
Well, it didn't, because Panarin almost never talked to us. and, like, just, like, even though he spoke pretty much fluent English, he just decided, like, yeah, I'm not talking. And then they didn't get him an interpreter, translator, you know, only a few times. And so, yeah, we basically never talked to him on the record. I mean, I used to just kind of BS with him because he speaks English, you know, and we used to joke around a little bit in the locker room, but it was never anything like on the record, you know, or anything like that. So that didn't affect us at all. And then, you know, Bob basically came out at the beginning of last season, if you'll recall, and he basically laid it out all at once and basically said, I've already told the team what my plans are for the future. And he had this real ominous tone. So, like, even though he didn't say, I'm out of here, he was like, oh, yeah, he's out of here, you know. And so you just kind of knew, covering the team last year, that was going to be his last season, you know, with the Blue Jackets. And so it's funny because people just probably, I think a lot of people on the outside, you know, in other media markets and fans or anything, I'm sure they'd probably just assume that we were asking them about that stuff every day, but we hardly ever asked those questions because we knew. I mean, we knew Bob was gone. I mean, it would have been a shock to pretty much everybody if he had stayed. And we kind of felt the same way about Panarin. So a lot of those questions that those guys got and that their teammates got, they came in like when we were in other markets, you know, and from other, like, especially Toronto and places like that, they would kind of stir the pot a little bit. But we never really did, because we knew the answers. You know, there wasn't a big question there.
Right. Are there any challenges that you do face while covering the team during the season, off season?
Well, I mean, there's always challenges. And in this industry, you know, the players, to be quite frank, they don't always like talking to us, you know, of course. And so you're going through ways that you're trying to get interviews and that kind of thing. But to be honest with you, the Blue Jackets PR department does, I think they do a bang up job. They do a great job of, you know, putting us in contact with players and getting their team coverage and, you know, publicity and everything. And that's what you want is you know, access. And so, some guys can be difficult every once in a while, but really, I'm telling you, like, hockey players, they, for the most part, I mean, you have your exceptions here and there, but for the most part, they're nice guys, and, you know, they'll answer what like, Duchesne's a great example. He comes in last year, we don't know him from Adam, and he was the nicest guy, and he was just frank and kind of, and really honest. I mean, you'd ask him anything, and he would either say, I don't want to answer that right now, or he would just give you a straight up answer. I don't know. I don't know what I'm thinking for the offseason or whatever. So I really appreciate hockey players, and it's one of the reasons that I really do love writing about this sport.
So, Brian, I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, working with bigger teams, or I guess more public interest surrounds like the Blackhawks and the Red Wings. So what is it like covering a smaller market team like the Blue Jackets? And do you feel like that grants you more access and you are able to build relationships more? Or do you feel like you'd rather have more people covering them than they are right now?
Well, it's interesting. So when I started with covering the Blackhawks, it was 2010, and it was right before they went on their first cup run. Like, it was literally in March. I started like covering them for NHL.com. And, that locker, that team, if you go back to the 2010 Blackhawks team, they had John Madden on that team as a player, actually. And, he was like by far the kind of the trusty old veteran that, showed them the way of how to be a pro and that kind of thing. And, won a cup with them. But most of that team they were kind of known as like the lovable young punks of the NHL, like just kind of did what they wanted and, just played how they wanted, and they won a lot. And then they ended up winning the cup. So what was interesting was they had not won the cup in 49 years. And so from our aspect, games would come out, we'd get over, and they would just open the locker room up, and you'd open it up, and all of a sudden, like, pretty much all the guys are at their stalls, and like whoever you want to talk to, you just go over to them. And that completely changed after they won the cup. It was like, it wasn't as drastic as what it might be if you looked at it from like, say, 2018 versus 2010, but it just progressively kind of got more difficult to cover them, because those guys would just basically hide in this back area of the locker room where they knew that we couldn't access them. And so we had to ask for them, and then they could say, no, I don't want to come out, that kind of thing. I mean, all that stuff started after they won the cup, and then they won it again, and then they won it again. And it was just like, okay, now you're big timing us, a little bit. And it did feel that way. And then, at the same time, like, I was there. So you just notice more and more people talking about the team that you cover, right? And they're on TV, and it's more national. And it was an interesting thing, because before they won the cup, I'm telling you, the Blackhawks were not like this monster that they are now, like this monster media. Everyone loves them. That they were not. I mean, they were coming back a little bit, but they hadn't won anything, and they weren't like, they were by far the least followed team in Chicago before they won. And then you could see it change instantly as soon as they won the cup, and then another one. They got right up there with the Bears and the Cubs in coverage and attention and stuff like that. So that was kind of fun, because then you start getting like radio programs that were calling you, be like, hey, you want to come on? And I'm like, it's not even the playoffs, and you're calling me to talk about hockey. It's pretty cool, in Chicago. From that aspect, then I go for there. I was there for 8+ seasons. And then I come here to Columbus, and yeah, it was a little different, atmosphere, because it is a little smaller market. It's big, a lot smaller market, obviously. I wouldn't say the interest is that much less, to be honest with you, though. I know that there are still games throughout the season where, the school night games and all that stuff, where there's not hardly anybody in the crowd and all that. But I mean, you take some of those playoff games and the atmosphere that was inside the building. I'm telling you right now, I've been in both buildings. They are right on par with whatever the United Center wants to throw at them. It's unbelievable. I could not. And that was something that was a little bit of a surprise to me, coming to Columbus and seeing just how much people really do care about the Columbus Blue Jackets fans. I mean, you have diehard fans here in Columbus. And I think it's been interesting from my aspect, because, Blackhawks will come in town and they'll still have their fans. I remember kind of milling about and hearing Blackhawks fans saying stuff like, oh my gosh, there's actual Blue Jackets fans. Look at that guy. He's wearing a Blue Jackets jersey, like all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm just thinking like, that's the attitude that is pervasive throughout the entire NHL about Columbus. And that's what they're fighting right now, to be honest with you. They are fighting that. Because people just like, one thing I have noticed more than anything else is how much Columbus gets overlooked in the NHL landscape. I mean, the other day, I don't know if you guys saw this, but they had, I think it was EA Sports, they were coming out with their 2020 game, you know, whatever, the NHL hockey game.
Yeah.
And they tweeted out, they're like, hey, here's the top 50 players in the NHL, and here's their ratings. And there's no freaking Seth Jones on there,
yeah.
Right?
We were talking about
it last week, yeah.
Yeah, last week it was a huge topic for us. We were like, how is this even possible?
it's really insulting, to be honest with you, and I'm just the guy who covers the team. But it's like, I mean, if you're going to do something like this, come on. Like, he is one of the best players in the NHL.
Yeah.
By far, bar none, bar position, whatever. You know, he is, and he deserves to be in there, and they screwed that up. So, but I mean, I think that's a good example of what I'm saying. Like, just the Columbus gets overlooked for whatever reason. I think part of it is just because they're so bad for so long at the start of their existence. And so, you know, they've really only been a quote unquote good team since Yarmo's been here. And it's been like, what, 7 or 8 years or something. The next step, they have to keep winning. And that's why this season is so fascinating and so important. If they can get back to the playoffs and win another round or two or something like that with a team that lost Panarin, lost Duchesne, lost Bobrovsky, and they just keep rolling forward, if they can pull that off, I mean, I think the sky's the limit over here. I really do. I mean, I think that that Yarmo and his crew, they do a really good job of talent identification and development, but you gotta develop a star, and I think you're gonna have to develop like superstars from within your own system to get them to stay here. And they have in Cam Atkinson, but they need to keep doing it.
You know, it's funny. When I was traveling to Texas back in April, I was in the Charlotte airport, and I saw a guy with a Blue Jackets hat during the playoffs, and I was like, "Oh wow, Blue Jackets fan! I got to talk to him." So it's right. Kind of funny to me too. Whenever I see a Blue Jackets fan like somewhere else, but anyway,
yeah, you see him more and more now. Like I, one of the benefits of my job now, like when I was in Chicago, I didn't travel full, so now obviously I'm full travel, so I'm all over the league. I see all these, and you see. I'm starting to see more Blue Jackets fans going to games in pretty much every single market in the NHL, which is cool to see.
What would you say the difference would be between covering the team as an employee versus covering it for a media outlet?
It's really, you know, honestly, I've done both, obviously. You know, I've done both here, and it's really not all that different, to be honest with you. You know, like, it is in a certain way because you can't full-on go, you know, full hardcore, these guys stink, blah blah blah, or this game, or this happened, or that happened, or whatever. Yeah, and I don't usually do that anyway when I write, but you know, the criticism, I feel like you have more, obviously you have more independence to kind of say what you want to say or analyze something, you know, the way you want to do it. But at the same time, I mean, I did that job for the team and I never really got any reverb, maybe a little bit here and there. But it really wasn't that much. So that's not the way it is with all teams. Let's just put it that way. I mean, like, I know that each team has certain, you know, things that they want to control and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I came in and I felt like the Blue Jackets, you know, let me do that job, writing for the website the way I wanted to do it. And, you know, come up, I tried to be as creative as I could and come up with some kind of creative content ideas and stories and takeaways and all that kind of stuff. I definitely held back certain times, you know, in certain, like, you know, breakdowns of games or whatever, but not much, you know, like I just kind of found ways to write around certain things or soften them up a little bit, but it wasn't like I was full on fluff piecing it, you know? And so I think there's that, but you know, and also here's another difference is when you work for the team, this is kind of a big one. When you work for the team, I just wasn't comfortable calling agents, like players, agents and everything. I went through like the front office for the Jackets and I would say, hey, you know, do you guys mind if I call this guy's agent for a feature story I'm doing? Yeah, sure. Like, go ahead. Like, I always wanted to get that cleared ahead of time because, you know, I was a team employee. I mean, let's face facts. I was a team employee. I was writing for the team's website. And, you know, you start talking to guys and you start talking, I'm sure, what is our agent going to think? Well, why is this guy calling my guy? You know, what's he going to relay back to their, you know, like all these little mind games can probably start if you really think about it. Whereas if you're with the newspaper, I have no problem calling agents. I have no problem calling players at home or what if I have their number or any of that kind of stuff, because I'm with an independent, you know, organization, a media outlet that covers the team, and I'm not associated with the team. And so nobody can misconstrue any kind of intentions of what. So that's kind of a big difference right there. And to be honest with you, it makes you feel a little freer, a little more independent, you know, when you can call who you need to call to get a story.
When it comes to like the local newspapers, what do you think, or for local newspapers to survive in these days, what do you think would need to change, you know, as far as the way we consume news? Basically, how do you think newspapers can continue to thrive or survive?
Well, I would like to see us be able to figure out a way to kind of change the way we deliver the product. I know already we're starting to shift, you know, at the Dispatch and Gatehouse Media, we're starting to shift to more of an online, you know, type of presence. But I feel like sometimes, you know, you're trying to do two products at once. You're trying to put out a print product that keeps shrinking. I mean, look at the, you know, size of the Dispatch now as compared to where it was probably 10 years ago or whatever. The handheld one that you put in your hand, I mean, it's way smaller. So, and which means that there's less space and, you know, you have less of an, you know, like you have to get your points in without being able to expand on certain points and that kind of thing. So like a lot of the coverage they do at The Athletic, for instance, like you simply couldn't fit it into a newspaper product. Like it would take your entire, like the entire news hole that you have for the sports section, it would be taken up by like one of their articles or two of their articles, you know? And so that's like a fundamental difference there. And to me, I see the internet and you have limitless space there, you know? And so I would like to see newspapers start to, you know, offer kind of like online versions and print versions. And what I mean is like you basically write the version the way it needs to be, however long it is going to be, because that can run online however long it is, and then edit it down, you know, for maybe the top points or whatever it is for the newspaper product. You know, I know it's a little extra work, but I would like to see that, because I feel like that's the one area where, like, if you're going head to head with like The Athletic or ESPN.com or NHL.com or any of those kind of places that are all online based, that's the one area that where they've really got us over a barrel, is because we're trying to write to certain specifications, and we have editors and copy editors that don't want to have to do like a million hours of extra work. And it's basically like, hey, give us X number of words for the print product and we'll just throw it online. I would kind of like to, personally, I'd like to see us have like a little longer, you know, versions online, so we could kind of compete with those other places. But, and then, you know, aside from that, and that's just kind of inside baseball technical stuff. It's also the way it's presented, as far as like this year, I'm going to try and do, these will all be online only. I don't think you're gonna ever find these in print. Like last year I did 5 takeaways after every game, right? So I just kind of tried to figure out, okay, what are the things that I want people to remember about this game or think about going forward and that kind of thing. And I did those online I tried to do them for every single game. This year I think I'm gonna do something a little different, change it up. I think I'm gonna try doing something called, we're gonna try maybe call it the 3-2-1 or something like that. And you know, just have like 3 thoughts from the game. Maybe I'll ask 2 questions going that kind of spin it forward going into the next one. And, you know, 1 additional thought or funny stat or, you know, unique thing. And that's what it'll be like. That's be our follow up. It's just kind of, you know, it's kind of the way you guys do it as well. You know, with the Canon is, you're always trying to find like new angles and stuff, right? And different ways to tell stories. And I would kind of like to do that too. I think newspapers should kind of delve into some of the, you know, not just inside baseball all the time or hockey insider stuff. And there's a time and a place for notebooks and all that kind of stuff. But I do like some of the stuff that's a little unique. What do guys like to do in the off season, and or what do they like to do away from the rink, or, you know, what kind of cars are they driving, or anything, you know, like that kind of stuff. Fans love that stuff. And I think that newspapers, we're going to have to start providing content like that, that the fans really like.
So as the Monsters beat reporter, I get asked a lot about why I don't ask tougher questions sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I know, I mean, I've seen people tweet at you and ask the same thing.
Yep.
So how, like, I know I have to kind of frame my questions to toe the line sometimes to get what I want out of the coach without letting them know that I know what they're doing or what's going on, or like shaming them essentially into telling me things. Right. So how do you handle that? Like, how do you even handle the critics saying that to you as well?
I just let Portsy ask all the questions and then I just piggyback off of that.
Well, I don't have a Portsy like that.
Yeah, we're going to send him up there. We're going to send Portsy up there and he can ask all the hard questions up there too. There's a time and a place, right? There's a time and a place, and you just kind of have to develop that feel for when you want to put somebody on the spot. It doesn't happen often with me, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like fans sometimes, they look at this, they get angry when they watch a game or something, and they're like, I want to know, I demand to know this. Why did Torzak run this line out, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, here's the thing. Here's how it's going to go if I ask that question to Torz. If I go the exact same of what they want me to ask, I'm going to go, you know, John, why'd you run that third line coming out there? Blah, blah, blah. I can't believe you screwed this game up. You know, that kind of thing. If I go out and say something dumb like that, he's A, probably not going to answer the question at all. B, he's just going to walk away, probably shut down the interview, and then probably MF me on the way out. You know what I mean? Like, what good does that do anybody? That doesn't do anybody any good. Like,
right.
And the thing is, the thing that drives me nuts about this topic is that I do get this, and people say, well, why didn't you ask this? And why didn't you ask that? You know, to be honest with you, if you listen to the questions, those questions are getting asked. They are getting asked, but they're just not getting asked like a total jackass. You know, like, they're not. I mean, we're asking those questions, but we're just not asking it like a total jerk. And so then, people can't relate. And like, well, why didn't you ask it like I would have asked it? Right. And then my favorite part of that is, one of my favorite comebacks is, you know what? Like, I would love to see you come down here, and I would love to see exactly, like, put you face to face with Torts. Okay, now go ahead and ask your, you know, inane question. You're just like offended tone of voice. Go ahead, ask him and see what happens. You know,
right? That's how it was with Mads. People would be like, "Well, ask him why he pulled the goalie like 5 minutes into the game," and I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to ask him. He's going to give me the same answer every time, and after a while he's just gonna give me the eyebrow."
Absolutely. All right, exactly. And then what good does that do you going forward? You know, you got to cover that team every single day. You're trying to, like, get information for the fans, you know, as the beat writer of the Monsters. You're trying to kind of develop a relationship there, and if you develop this like hostile relationship back and forth, it's not going to do anybody any good.
Right, and there's only two of us who are there consistently, so that makes it extra awkward.
For sure. Oh, totally. And, you know, we had this, I'm not going to name names, but we had a guy in Chicago, well, several guys in Chicago who were on the radio. They were like radio, like, you know, on one of the bigger stations, and they used to just like light the Blackhawks beat writers up all the time. And they would say, you know, I can't believe, you know, Chris Tuch of the Tribune didn't ask this or didn't ask that, or I can't believe Hedger didn't say this or that, the whole thing, right? Just what we're talking about. And one time, I kept saying, well, where are these guys? Like, why don't you get out from behind your microphone and come down here and ask the question yourself? If you don't think we're doing a good enough job, you come out and come down here and do it. You're in the media. And they would never come down. It would never be. But one time there was. One of them came down one time, and it was Q. And they used to blast Q. Oh, Q this and Q that. I can't believe the guy did this and this and that. And it was a post-game thing, and there was a perfect opportunity for him to do it. The guy sat in the first row right in front of Q. He didn't say one word through the entire press conference. And I just sat there looking at him with the evil eye, and I was like, this was your opportunity, dude. Like, you had a shot right here where you could have just asked all your jackass questions right here. And you chickened out because it's harder than you think when the guy's right in front of you.
Right, and his mustache is intimidating up close.
Well, like, the mustache and the stare of death that goes right through you. I've gotten the you know, it's funny. I've had two just legendary coaches that, you know, I've covered in the NHL, and he's one of them, and obviously Torts is the other one, and they both have, like, legendary stares and stuff. Now, Torts is going to be, he'll light you up more verbally because he is really, I mean, he's actually a really advanced speaker when you think about it. He'll pull out references that you're like, wow, I didn't. Now, Q tries. He tries and tries to keep it as boring as possible. And we had this really funny, we had a whole system like, okay, well, if I ask this, I know he's going to say this or this. So we have to try and work around it. But every once in a while, you would, like, I would piss him off. I'd really tick him off or whatever with something I asked, probably some dumb question I asked. I'm kind of known for my dumb questions too. And he would give me this stare. And like, I would just be in my, inside, I'm just like, oh my God, I hope he doesn't kill me. Like, he can be a scary dude when he wants to be. I mean, he was a big, tough defenseman back in the day. But you know what? By and large, both those guys are just awesome human beings and they're great to deal with. So, yeah, that's a great topic, great question, because I hear it all the time. And my number one reply, like I said, is those questions are getting asked, really, but they're just not getting asked the way people want them to be asked. And that's the biggest kind of, you know, stumbling block, I guess.
All right, Bri, last question. So what I love about you is that you are an old school journalist and I'm an aspiring old school journalist. So tell
me. I was going to say the same thing about you, Rach. I was trying to find a way to pull that out there and be like, in fact, when I was talking all that old school newspaper mumbo jumbo, I was like, oh, Rachel understands.
I was loving it. Yeah. So tell everyone how you got into writing and how that kind of developed into this NHL track, you know, covering hockey. I mean, that was a whole different skill set I had to learn. I had no idea. I've written my whole life and then writing about hockey is just a whole different thing. So tell me about that. And then any advice you have to offer for people who want to cover this beat down the road.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. You go way back. I first got into like writing for newspapers, just like pretty much anybody else who did in high school, right? Writing for the high school newspaper and all that. And mm-hmm. I still have like clips and copies of like the articles I did back then. And they were just so comically bad and just like, you know, all these like me references and I'm like, God, I'm such an egomaniac, you know, like what the hell? And then, you know, you just go back and read it, like, God, so bad. And then you can, it's fun to, my wife always like blasts me and she's just like, why do you hang on to all these things? You're taking up space in our house. And I'm like, well, I like to go back over them every once in a while. And just, you can see the progression of, you know, I've gotten better over the years. And I'm being egotistical again, but like literally anybody in any profession, the longer you keep doing it and the more work you keep putting into it day after day after day after year, you get better. I mean, it's just like sports. It's like anything else. Practice makes perfect, right? So I look back then to now and I'm like, wow, like this has been quite a journey and it's been a lot of fun. But to kind of answer your question and going back from high school to college, I ended up going to Michigan State, which has a really good journalism program, but I didn't go there for journalism. I went there for, I was going to be a civil engineer of all things. I was going to build bridges, guys. And let me tell you, be very happy as you're driving over your next bridge that I did not build that bridge because you'd probably die. It was bad, right? Like, they always talk about weeder courses, you know, I got weeded out, you know, like they basically were like, no, you're not cut out for this. So after my freshman year, I was like, dude, I got to find something I'm good at, something I like doing, or I'm going to flunk out of here. Like, this is bad, right? So I was going to do business next. All right, business. You know, you can make a lot of money. I was always money driven. I was like, I'm going to have to provide for my family if I ever have a family. I got to make money. So it was cold. I'm not kidding. It was a freezing cold day, like a spring day of anything at Michigan State. And I'm walking to the business department, and I'm like, okay, I'm walking. I'm going to go to the Eli Broad School of Business to meet with an advisor. And it's freezing from my dorm, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to just walk through the communications department here. I'm going to walk through it because they got heat. So I walk through, and I see, like, you know, sign on the door, like, journalism. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting, you know. And then the door's open, and there's an advisor, and I just kind of knocked. And I said, do you have a couple minutes to meet with me? And she was like, sure, you know, and I told her the whole thing. And so we talked, and I started getting more excited about the possibility of maybe becoming a journalist. I thought it might be kind of fun, you know. And then at the end, I said, hey, I have one last question. And she's like, what? I go, if I go into journalism, do I have any math requirements left? And she's like, no, you already. I'm like, good, sign me up, like, right now. I don't want to do any more math. I just want to write, you know. And So that's literally how it happened. I shifted to journalism, and honestly, like every course I took from there on out, writing courses, reporting courses, freelance journalism, which I had no idea at that point was going to become such a big part of my life later on. I took a freelance course and, just did every course was easy. It was like, oh my God, this. And so then I had that feeling like, well, this is what I should be doing, I guess, And then I ended up writing for, just like you wrote for the Lantern, Rach, I ended up getting really lucky. I got on staff at the State News. Michigan State, which was our daily, independent newspaper there, and just took it from there. And I went to, I think it was one, two, three, like four newspapers, three or four newspapers full time. And then I had a weird shift where, like, I did all this sports writing for, I want to say almost 15 years. And then I ended up I thought I was going to get laid off with the Chicago Sun-Times paper. It wasn't the Sun-Times. It was like one of their subsidiaries in Northwest Indiana, the Post-Tribune. And I thought, I was writing sports. I was happy. But they were going through rounds of layoffs. And I was like, man, I need to find a job where I actually have some job security. So I ended up getting a job with the American Medical Association. They used to have a newspaper called AM News. And it came out twice a month, and it was right about medicine, like medicine, doctors, legal, medical profession issues. And it was the hardest switch I've ever made in my life, because I went from like what they call the toy department in, newspapers, the sports department, the toy department. I went from that to like straight up hard news, and it was difficult. It was a difficult change. But here's the thing. I was there for 6 months and they laid me off. So I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, I thought I was getting into trade newspapers. So from there is how I jumped to hockey ultimately, because I had to reassess my career at that point. And I said, I told my wife, I'm just going to freelance for a little while. I'm going to probably do mostly sports, because that's what I'm good at. And that's what I like doing. And we'll just see where it goes. And in the meantime, I'm going to try and maybe find another career, but we'll just see where this goes. And that's kind of how it happened. Like, I started freelancing for the Chicago Tribune. I freelanced for like almost all the Chicago dailies, really. High school stuff, college stuff, really not much pro stuff. But then I kind of picked up MLB.com along the way, like the freelance stuff that when their beat writers couldn't get there, I would fill in. And then I get my big break was actually Craig Custance. He's a Michigan State guy as well. And I knew him, of all things, from a fantasy baseball league that we were both in. And he was a great guy. And so basically he emailed me one day and he said, hey, NHL.com is trying to find somebody in Chicago to be like their correspondent. It'd be a freelance thing. Are you interested? And I said, absolutely. And it just kind of worked out. And so I ended up being there for like 8 years, covering the Hawks and on a regular basis, on a freelance basis. And that's actually why, they never made me full time. And so that's why I ended up with the Blue Jackets, because that was a full time job and I had to take it. And, it's been fun, and this is already going to be my third year covering the Blue Jackets. I mean, it goes so fast, So, it's been one crazy journey from civil engineer to writer, but that's how it happened. And as far as advice, my advice for people that are wanting to get into this business or sports writing, whatever, it's just what I was saying, it's just dedication. And it's also, just trying to get your foot in the right door, and it's networking. Networking is huge in this industry. If you can, make as many friends as you can, because that guy's going to know somebody else, or that, woman will know somebody else who knows somebody else And then all of a sudden, before you know it, maybe somebody says, hey, I think so-and-so might be good for this job. Why don't you talk to them? And then, once you get your foot in the door, then it's about what you've learned and how good you are and your skills and all that kind of stuff. But the skills aren't going to do it for you alone. And that's where I made my mistake coming out of college. I thought, well, I'm a pretty good writer and I'm going to keep getting better and better and someone will grab me. And it's just not the way it happens. You have to be proactive for yourself, and you have to get out there and kind of network and meet people. And then once you get a break, an opportunity, you got to capitalize on it by being good.
Well, we're just about out of time for this week's episode. Brian, we want to thank you again for joining us. You can read him at the Columbus Dispatch and follow on Twitter at Brian Hedger. Yeah, this was awesome. Thanks for so much for taking the time today.
Thanks. Oh, thanks for having me, guys. If you want me on any time, it's not a problem. I just love talking hockey and just talking in general. Sorry I took up all your time.
No, this was great. Our theme music is Green Eyes by Angela Pearley and the Howlin' Moons. If you haven't checked out Angela's new album 430, you absolutely should. You can stream it all over and you can find out more at angelapearley.com. Rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. And as always, we welcome your comments and questions. You can tweet at us at CBJCannon and comment on jacketscannon.com. From all of us at The Cannon, thank you for listening and we will see you next week.